Hello and welcome to the latest seminar from the Glasgow Centre for Population Health, supporting new approaches to improve health and tackle inequality. In this video cast, Professor Kevin Fenton discusses a public health approach to incorporating anti-racism and structural discrimination in tackling racial and ethnic health disparities. It was recorded via Zoom on the 12th of June, 2023.
A very warm welcome to this webinar that's hosted by the Glasgow Centre for Population Health and the Faculty of Public Health. My name is Paul Johnston, and it's my privilege to chair the session. I am the Chief Executive of Public Health Scotland. I've been for a few months now, and I was delighted to have this invitation to welcome Professor Kevin Fenton, President of the Faculty of Public Health, who will be giving our keynote address this afternoon, looking at a public health approach to incorporating anti-racism and structural discrimination in tackling racial and ethnic health disparities. The importance of the subject is clear when we see just how many have chosen to join today. Kevin Fenton, as I mentioned, is the President of the Faculty of Public Health, a senior public health expert, an infectious disease epidemiologist who has worked in many public health executive leadership roles across the United Kingdom and internationally, with a specialist interest in tackling health inequalities, infectious disease prevention and control, climate justice and urban health. Kevin, could I invite you to speak to us now? Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon and a privilege to be able to do this lecture and to reflect on what I think is an evolving part of our public health practice. It's a challenging part of the societal conversations that we need to have, but it's an area that presents and provides tremendous opportunities for us to do things differently in order to achieve different outcomes. But to set the lecture up this afternoon, what I wanted to do is to cover a few things. First, to begin with a reflection on racism and our evolution of our thinking on racism and structural racism, and why it's important for us to begin incorporating this into our practice as far as tackling racial and ethnic health disparities is concerned. Second, I wanted to use our experience, our collective experience of going through the COVID pandemic, which really shone a light on both pre-existing and exacerbated inequalities, to really think about what are the nature and scale of the inequalities attributable to structural racism and what we might be doing to address them. Third and finally, what I want to do is to reflect on frameworks that we're currently using here in London, but I know across the country and around the world, in thinking about a much more comprehensive approach to tackling structural racism and how that can be integrated into the work that we're doing across health and care systems. And of course, looking then at the implications for public health practice. And then finally, I'll end with a call to action, one for us all to think about our individual actions in addressing this agenda, but also our collective actions as well. Throughout the course of the lecture today, I'm going to be highlighting the leadership of some of my own heroes in public health, but also heroes in tackling inequalities. And I start with this quote from Martin Luther King, who said that of all the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is perhaps the most shocking and inhuman. And it really does focus the hearts and minds about the nature of the challenges that we face when it comes to providing equitable health and care to all in need. But it also highlights that the challenges that we're facing are not new ones. They've existed for decades. And whereas we've made great progress, there are lots of areas where we need to continue to push forward. So I mentioned what I'll be covering today are looking at racism as a public health issue, race and health in the UK. We look at the COVID pandemic, and then we'll focus on anti-racism in public health and health practice. Just to begin then with thinking about our concepts of race and racism. Mara Jones is a professor of public health who is working here in the UK at the moment, but she was previously the president of the American Public Health Association. And she has written and developed programs looking at the impact of racism on health. And I wanted to start with Kamara's definition of racism, because I think it's such a comprehensive one, which talks about racism being a system of structuring opportunity and assigning value, which is based on the social interpretation of how one looks. And in this regard, we're talking about using race as the definer of how one looks, looking at differences in our skin color. Now, the ultimate impact of this is that this assigning of value and this association of structuring opportunity results in unfair disadvantages of some individuals and communities and unfairly advantages other individuals and communities. But most importantly, as a result of this structural racism, it saps the strength of the whole society through the waste of human resources. So in this definition, not only are we speaking about the societal roots of differences and how differences are valued, but we then begin to think about what it actually does in terms of advantage and privilege, and how all of society is at a loss because of the impact of structural racism. So when we look at the literature then goes into thinking about a lot of the definitions of race and racism. And I wanted to just highlight a few things which I think are particularly important for us in our public health practice. The first is that the terms of race and racism are not interchangeable constructs. Each has its own definition, conceptualization, the way we measure it. And in fact, where we look at it in public health research varies across societies. Reminder that race is a social construct. There's no biological basis for the definition per se, but where racism does refer to this social system that reinforces social and racial group inequality and hierarchy. So really, it's a social construct which has been used to define hierarchy within the community and to reinforce racial group inequity. Racialization is another key definition, and this is the process through which meaning and value are ascribed to socially determined racial categories. And each racial category occupies a different place within the social hierarchy. And this is really important because where you move, wherever you are in different countries and settings, you may have those hierarchies being different according to the racial groups, the ethnic groups, which are within that society. So racism here in the United Kingdom will have a different flavor given our demographic profile, the history of our society compared to the US or to France or Germany. So it's really important to understand that process of giving meaning and value is a socially prescribed one, and it's one that really will determine the social hierarchy and the impact of racism within those societies. As we think about the process of racialization, there's also other core concepts that we need to also put on the table as well. The fact is that racism itself, because it values different types of races over other and systematically disadvantages some races compared to others, it does mean that we have a process where, irrespective of one's socioeconomic status, you will still have the impact of racism manifesting itself. Second, recognizing that racism operates and intersects with other types of disadvantage and discrimination. So whether it's anti-Gypsyism, anti-Semitism, anti-Asian racism, but also integration, intersection with gender, sexual orientation, your migrant status, and disability. So that intersectionality is also important as well. So just a few concepts just to get us started this afternoon on the importance of race and racism and defining these as we proceed. So what we're trying to think about then is how we begin to think about this complex reality and this problem, which sometimes has been described as a wicked problem, and how we begin to use and think about this and integrate it into or practice in public health. In fact, racism now should be considered a fundamental determinant of health, and I'll be going and speaking about why in a couple of slides. But in doing so, it recognizes that this is a structural factor societally determined, which continues to endure and adapt over time. And it's really important because it influences many mechanisms within our societies, which are important for generating and affecting health. So structural racism will influence the funding, the policies, the practices, and the pathways, which ultimately are generating health within society. And the health consequences of living in a racially stratified society are often illustrated by a variety of differential health outcomes or health disparities. And we'll be going through some of these in subsequent slides. So, important to recognize as well that there are different types of racism as well. And here is a definition which we've used, taken from literature from the United States, on three different ways of conceptualizing types of racism that societies and individuals may face. There's the internalized racism, which is looking at acceptance by a member of stigmatized races of the negative messages about one's own abilities and intrinsic worth. So the degree to which members of minority groups will internalize the negative stereotypes about that group, and how that then influences their engagement and trust and confidence, self-worth and self-esteem. Second, institutionalized racism, which is the differential access to goods, services, and opportunities of society determined by race. And then finally, structural racism, which is the normalization and the legitimization of a range of different types of dynamics within a society, which in the case of racism, routinely advantages white individuals while producing cumulative and chronic adverse outcomes for people of color. So in a sense, structural racism embeds and reinforces the various structures, whether it's institutionalized racism, and also results in that impact on the individual as well through internalized racism. So the impact then of racism is felt both at the individual level as well as at the societal level. The experiences of racism results in both chronic discrimination, it results in stress to the individual, it may result in depression and anxiety that really becomes part of the lived experiences of people who are on the receiving end of being in a racist society and dealing with racism. And that is further compounded by the intersection between racism as one form of structural discrimination with other types of structural discrimination as well. So in communities which are racialized and may be experiencing racism, factors such as adverse childhood experiences, adverse adult experiences to racism, it combined with economic disadvantage, community violence in some circumstances, may result in that long-term toxic stress on individuals, resulting in premature morbidity and premature mortality. And this is well defined in the literature in terms of the impact of toxic stress and how that impacts on individuals. At the societal level, we think about structural racism, and I've already defined structural racism in the previous slide, but what I want to do is to go through this in a little bit more detail here. And this is about how societies, through structural racism, will limit opportunities for social, economic, and financial advancement of different groups in society based upon the color of their skin. And this, in turn, results in dynamic interplay between race and social determinants and health to result in different and negative health outcomes. So in other words, racialized communities, which are at the experiencing structural racism, are also likely to have poor access to quality schools. They may have poor access to good paying jobs, lower access to higher incomes, unable to accumulate wealth, and maybe living in poor neighborhoods or less well neighborhoods, but also unable to access or navigate the health and care system. So that dynamic interaction between one's experience of racism and how it intersects with other social determinants becomes really important in looking at the variations in health outcomes. And it's also important that, you know, because there's the concentration of power among privileged groups and the devaluation of populations of other groups, that you begin to think about how this can cut across other types of disadvantage as well. So again, in this example, just highlighting the fact that irrespective of socioeconomic status, that Black people in the US continue to experience striking disparities in morbidity as well as mortality. Wealth accumulation in Black people in the US is less compared to their white counterparts due to their experience of unemployment and lower wealth accumulation. So again, structural issues which are baked in. So even when you adjust for socioeconomic status, you're still seeing the differences across racial and ethnic groups. So therefore, this really, I think, given the nature of the challenge and the problems that we have, must be seen as a public health issue. And it's important for us to have the language to be able to talk about this, to be able to have difficult conversations about integrating this into our public health and care practice, and to begin to find the space for us to have the conversations on this issue. So in this slide, we talk about the reason why racism and structural racism is a public health issue. As you'll see in subsequent slides, there's a clear understanding from members of the public that their lived experience dictates that this is a major issue, with 25 to 40% of participants in surveys in the US reporting, in the United Kingdom reporting that they would discriminate against ethnic minority groups. A third of people from ethnic minority backgrounds reporting that they constrain their lives through fear of racism. Reported hate crimes in the United Kingdom, we know, have been increasing over the past decade and have increased and continue to do so as we've emerged from the COVID-19 pandemic. We know that there are substantial disparities between ethnic minority groups and majority groups in housing, education, experience of the criminal justice system. And this, we know, is related both to social and economic deprivation, but increasingly we're seeing where racism and structural racism is playing a part in this as well. And although race and racism is really relevant to help, you know, the way in which we are understanding it and studying it also needs to be strengthened as well. So not only are we recognizing this as a challenge, but I think it's really important for the public health community to begin thinking about how we measure this problem, how we think about the effective interventions which are in place to address them, and what are the tools available for us to address and to support communities and individuals that are dealing with racism and systems which are dealing with racism as well. So really framing this as a public health issue is a key part, I think, of beginning to address the challenge that we have. In the next slide, I wanted to just reinforce that framing is critical for us as we think about racism as a public health issue. And framing racism as a public health issue really allows organizations and governments to really begin to think about the crisis of structural racism in much more broader, systematic, and evidence-informed ways. And so it allows us to begin thinking about, given the problems that we're defining and how we're addressing them, what are the strategic initiatives and policies, practices, what education might be needed, support services might be needed to address the problem. So this is a reason why we begin to frame racism as a public health issue. And in fact, the Association of Directors of Public Health in the UK, the Faculty of Public Health, have made public statements about racism being a public health issue. And this has exactly allowed us to do the sort of detailed work to take our response forward. I'm going to move on very quickly then to racism and health in the UK, and just really highlighting some of the data on what we now know about how racism is manifesting itself and its impact on health. We know that there are a number of studies now which have been published, which highlight the impact of racism on health and the experience of minoritized communities receiving poor treatment, depending irrespective of their character or abilities, and the lived experiences of many minorities across the country about structural racism. And again, the experience of the pandemic really brought this to a fore, both in terms of the pandemic response and how it disproportionately affected different communities, but also what was happening societally in terms of the wider determinants of COVID risk and how those wider determinants were influenced by structural racism as well. I've highlighted also data from the Health Foundation, which really talks about how discrimination is affecting people in a variety of ways, including access to education and employment opportunities. And then again, how that has a significant impact on health outcomes. So how does structural racism operate in our health and care system? I think there are a number of pathways which are now becoming absolutely clear in how we can think about structural racism as an impact on health and healthcare. The first is how it limits access and barriers to healthcare. Again, this might be through cultural barriers, linguistic barriers, access barriers, the ability to navigate the systems, the confidence that you and I may have in picking up NHS 111, having a conversation, describing our symptoms, and of course, pushing for access to effective services. That can have a huge impact and difference across community or individuals and communities, which can have a significant impact on ability to access healthcare. We see structural racism playing out in terms of bias in clinical decision-making. For example, we know that this may result in implicit bias in how decisions are made clinically, negative impact on patient care, and it may also influence the kinds of investigations that patients receive. We've seen this in terms of access to pain medication for minorities, where a number of studies have shown that Black minority ethnic communities are less likely to access very powerful pain medications when required compared to their white counterparts. We know that as we've been looking at significant differences in maternal health outcomes that we've been seeing in a number of research studies about bias in clinical decision making and how that plays out in the maternity space as well. We see structural racism playing out in inequalities in patient outcomes, and this results in patients experiencing poorer health outcomes, diagnostic delays, suboptimal treatment, or worse health outcomes for certain health conditions. We also see structural racism in health and care systems manifesting itself in workforce disparities as well. Which groups have senior roles and positions within health and care systems, which communities are overrepresented in lower paid and lower status roles, who within your organization is more likely to report bullying, harassment, and discrimination, and which groups within your organization are likely to experience poor health or ill health as a result of their experience in the workplace. So we see structural racism playing out in workforce disparities as well. And then finally, we see structural racism appearing in clinical trials and the lack of diversity in clinical trials as well. So a real challenge there in terms of who gets invited to participate in research trials, the applicability, relevance of trial data to different ethnic and community groups, and how this manifests in terms of the applicability of the findings of these trials to different communities. So the lack of diversity in clinical trials then plays out into how patients trust the results of those trials, their willingness to take up new interventions. We saw this playing out with the COVID vaccine and the COVID vaccine availability. But increasingly, I think patients are wanting to know now, you know, how diverse was the patient group, the studies which generated the findings, are they relevant to me? What are the side effects profile, et cetera. So the lack of diversity within clinical trials has a huge impact now on the willingness of patients and communities to trust this kind of research. So this slide just really highlights the ways in which structural racism operates in health and care systems. Ultimately, we know that prior to the pandemic, we saw significant variations in ethnic health inequalities across the United Kingdom. And this slide just highlights some of the key areas where we saw some of those differences. I've already referred to some of the differences in maternal health outcomes, where Black women are four times more likely than white women to die in pregnancy. And these are data from the Race and Health Observatory here in England. In Britain, South Asians have a 40% higher death rate from coronary heart disease than the general population. We know that South Asian and Black people are 2 to 4 times more likely to develop type 2 diabetes than white people in the UK. and that African-American men are up to 3 times more likely to develop prostate cancer than white men in the same age. And of course, we know that from our experience through the COVID-19 pandemic, that there were significant differences in mortality from COVID-19 among minority groups compared to the white British population. So prior to the pandemic, there were longstanding health inequalities, which were well described, operating across the United Kingdom. And these are just a few of those points. In the next slide, we just want to highlight that these ethnic inequalities are not only observed in the health sector, but again, we begin to see them manifesting themselves, these disparities in other spheres of life as well, and these social and structural determinants. So for employment, we know that there are significant differences in your likelihood of being employed and unemployed by racial and ethnic groups. Some of the data are on this slide. 76% of people of white people who were employed in 2021 compared to 67% of people from all other ethnic groups. We know that there are significant differences in unemployment, with 1 in 10, sorry, I'm looking at the phone, it's not easy to see, with significant differences in the level of unemployment across racial and ethnic groups, with Pakistani and Bangladeshi background individuals being more likely to be unemployed than other ethnic groups. And again, we see differences in the sort of rates of self-employment across racial and ethnic groups as well. And how that influences the amount of pay that individuals are able to receive. And then finally, just in terms of another social determinant of health, very significant differences in housing. Again, here that we see that households that are most likely to rent social housing were headed by someone in the African, Caribbean, or other Black, Bangladeshi, Irish, or Arab groups, or mixed groups compared to white groups in the United Kingdom. And ethnic minority households are much more likely to rent privately than white households. Again, some of the data are included on this slide, and really just they're here just to highlight some of the structural differences that we see in employment or housing across racial and ethnic groups. I'm going to move us on just in the interest of time, because I'm mindful that we're going to have to wrap up shortly. Michael Marmot really summarized, I think, quite nicely why this is important for us to really have a clear focus on tackling these wider determinants. And he argues that in reality, our health is dependent on the state of our society and the distribution of power and resources within it. And perhaps nowhere was this seen more clearly than in the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. And since 2020, there have been a number of studies which have been published to help us to understand why we saw such rapid manifestations of ethnic and racial disparities in COVID-19 and the intersection of racism and poverty on COVID-related health challenges. And this schematic from Zachary, I think, has been just really a clear distillation of how a structural racism interfaces with poverty, and then how that results in both a higher prevalence of pre-existing health challenges, reduced access to healthcare, the housing conditions that people are living in, as well as employment in high-risk occupations, which in turn resulted in differences in COVID-19 risk and outcome. And we saw through the COVID pandemic where we began to see a number of impacts of who was likely to be admitted and to develop severe disease and to die from COVID. So we saw clearly people who lived in overcrowded or multi-generational households, people who worked in jobs with increased risk of coming into contact with individuals who were at high risk of developing COVID, for example, health and care workers, people who resided in poor parts of our cities were far more likely, and dense urban areas were far more likely to develop COVID, to have a higher risk of becoming infected. We saw through both qualitative and quantitative studies that were studies that where we had a higher level of stigma, low trust and low confidence, and poor relationships or partnerships between communities and health and care systems, that those communities tended to be more affected by COVID-19. And again, through qualitative studies, the lived experiences of communities that had experienced racism and discrimination were again more likely to have a negative experience going through the pandemic. The next slide just highlights some of the data that we saw in England as it relates to the COVID pandemic, which is well described now. In the first wave of the pandemic, significant differences in the likelihood of being diagnosed with COVID, patterns which maintained throughout most of the pandemic and were exacerbated with successive waves of the pandemic. And the next slide highlights the differences that we observed in the first wave of the pandemic, in differences across in the likelihood of being diagnosed, the likelihood of dying from the disease, depending on your level of deprivation. So we saw significant differences. If you lived in more deprived parts of the country, you're much more likely to be diagnosed and to die from COVID. And we saw significant differences between males and females in these data as well. So again, these differences manifested themselves really early in COVID-19 and persisted throughout. And as we went through the pandemic, we saw the persistence of these differences. So even when we looked at data to 2022, and you could look at the excess deaths and mortality from COVID-19, we see that Asian, Blacks, and mixed groups had higher levels of rates of registered deaths compared to whites. And the summary of deaths in England are presented on the right-hand side of the chart, just showing you some of the detail around the differences in terms of registered deaths, COVID deaths, and excess deaths by racial and ethnic groups. And again, you see significantly higher levels of registered compared to expected deaths for Asian, Black, and mixed groups compared to white groups in the UK. So in the final part of the talk, I wanted to quickly reflect on how do we take the experience of COVID to fundamentally do things differently in addressing and incorporating addressing structural racism in the work that we're doing. There are many lessons from the pandemic, and very happy to, I'm sure this will be discussed in the conversation that we have today, but clearly looking at how we place tackling inequalities at the forefront of our health and care systems is a key lesson from the pandemic. The partnerships which have been built up through the pandemic really enabled us to think differently about how we work together in health and care systems with communities to address and respond to threats, but also to address inequalities as well. We were able to use new kinds of data, integrate different kinds of data, and to be more agile in data to help us to define and evaluate our programs. This might be a true legacy of the pandemic and an opportunity for us to use data differently to understand and to respond to inequalities. And of course, the type of research that was done throughout the pandemic really provided us with an opportunity to correct some of the imbalances in research and scientific portfolios, both to engage communities more effectively and to include more diversity within trials and studies, but also to do the kinds of research that matter most to communities. And a final lesson from the pandemic has been the work to strengthen our community-centered approaches to tackling health inequalities as well, really building in asset-based approaches to community development in our work. We've done a lot of work in working in the London system to understand systematically what works in tackling structural racism. Again, I won't have time to go through these in any great detail today, but the literature is now developing in terms of interventions that can be delivered both at the individual level, social and community networks, in the healthcare settings and services, and finally, what you can do to intervene through living and working conditions. And this body of evidence is allowing us to think through the range of tools which are in the toolkit that can be used to address and tackle structural racism. So in the next few slides, I'm going to end by discussing a framework for anti-racism in public health and why this is so important. So it's really key that we move beyond simply talking about and defining and naming racism, but being far more proactive in the ways in which we identify, challenge, and change the values and structures and behaviors which are perpetuating racism within our systems. So anti-racism is a really active way of both seeing and being in the world, and being in our systems and being able to transform and address and respond to racism. The literature is now developing in terms of the range of interventions which are available for anti-racist approaches for individuals and organizations. And in the next slide, I just want to highlight a few components of what anti-racism is and what it might mean. So anti-racism is really about being a much more and taking a much more proactive stance to dealing with and addressing racism. It is about becoming aware of how racism affects the lived experiences of people of color within our society. It's about recognizing the systematic nature of racism, the historical and societal foundations of it, how it's manifested in terms of individual attitudes and behaviors, and how it influences the development of policies and practices within institutions. So really being aware of both the experiences of individuals, but also how is racism operating within my organization, within my community, and why is it so and what might be done. It also calls for a recognition of privilege and to have that conversation of why some communities are systematically advantaged and others are disadvantaged, and how that advantage may play out, both in terms of supporting the perpetuation of racism, but how to have conversations with communities that are privileged to begin to understand the nature of privilege and to be able to find an opportunity to work and to address that. So that's a key part of anti-racism. Now, in the next slide, there are a number of core principles which are really important for organizations in developing anti-racism stance. I've just highlighted just a few here, just to show some of the key things which have been recommended from the literature, but also other organizations in some of the approaches in becoming an anti-racist organization, important in integrating that into the stance and values of the organization, a clear leadership approach and leadership narrative and voice on being anti-racist. It's important to have a systematic approach to integrating anti-racism within the organization so that we're looking at organizations' processes, ways of working, people management policies. It's important to think about visible leadership, as I mentioned, and all levels of the organization, executive, middle management, supervisors, to be signed up to the anti-racism approach and to ensure that the behaviors are aligned. It's about creating safe spaces for the variety and diverse staff and members of your organization to ensure that employees' voices and the recognition of the challenges that employees may face find a way to be recognized and valued within the organization as well. And it's about ensuring that you're having a clear look at your people management approach from end to end to look at opportunities for addressing equality, diversity, inclusion, harassment and bullying, creating safe spaces within the organization. So really looking at people management approaches. So again, anti-racism is a more proactive stance for organizations. This gives one framework that you can look at anti-racism through in and through, but there are other frameworks which are available as well. In London, we are implementing, and this will be my final slide, anti-racism across our health and care system. And this framework just shares with you the five pillars of that approach. It begins with a strong leadership commitment from health and care leaders in London towards anti-racism, and our health and care leaders have made a public commitment to being anti-racist, board level review of strategy, monitoring objectives and indicators, and ensuring that they're implementing an anti-racist approach in all policies. So really working with our NHS local authority partners on the leadership aspect of this work. Next is really looking at workforce, using the power of data to monitor and act on health inequalities in recruitment, retention, well-being, as well as promotional opportunities, providing more systematic training and support to address work cultural biases within the workplace, to address discrimination within the workplace, and to create safe spaces, and to look at robust monitoring of equality, diversity, and inclusion policies as well. The third pillar of our approach in London is around developing robust health equity programs. So really building upon our experience of the pandemic to ensure that we're using the anti-racist lens on our key equity programs delivered to Londoners. So whether this is our programs through our Core 20 Plus 5 or health improvement programs, using other frameworks to tackle inequalities, for example, the Marmot framework, really ensuring that we're applying those as well, but ensuring that there's good data available for us to evaluate the impact of our work and to think about how we continue to integrate the personalized approach to developing culturally competent interventions. The fourth pillar is focused on leveraging the power of the NHS and local authorities as anchor institutions, and through their ability to commission from the local economy, to employ from the local community, to be a key player in tackling some of the social and structural determinants of health. And by being the largest employers in many communities, they have an ability through their workplace policies, through providing a living wage, through the work and conditions that they provide, to begin to create a safer environment for communities and opportunities for communities to be introduced to the health and care system, and of course to as a key opportunity to getting a well-paid job, a good job in a great environment. So really thinking about the role as anchor institutions. And then finally, to ensure that work within the health and care system is prioritizing the excellent work that we did through the pandemic in terms of working with communities to rebuild confidence and trust. And this includes strengthening the ways in which we're integrating communities in the decisions, design, and delivery of healthcare services, to strengthen the co-production work that we started in the pandemic, and to ensure that we continue to invest in the sort of community infrastructure through social prescribing or voluntary sector systems, community partnerships on the boards and decision-making bodies within the NHS, continue to develop that work as well. So five pillars of our practice in London that we are now rolling out as part of our anti-racist approach in the city. So colleagues, I'm going to end just after this slide. The next slide just is a summary slide. Really just wanted to highlight and to reflect today on definitions of race and racism, the importance of structural racism, why we're framing it as a public health issue. Wanted to use our experience of COVID to highlight both how racism operates and how it can manifest itself, both in terms of the models of how it impacts the health and care system. And we looked at COVID as an example of where that was really exacerbated and exemplified. And then I wanted to end by just sharing with you a framework for thinking through implementing anti-racist approaches within health and care systems and the role that public health practitioners will play in that. My final slide is a call to our action, which I promised that I'd do. And this is what I'm asking for all of you today. The first is that we say it, that we begin to name racism, to say the word actually out loud, to be able to describe it and to understand why it's a public health issue and why it's important for us to be addressing it. So your work and your leadership as health and care leaders to create the spaces for us to say this are critically important. Second, I'm asking you to see it. To ask how might racism be operating here, whether you're working in a small or large setting, the ways in which you're able to support colleagues and work with others to understand the power dynamics, the advantage, the privilege, the disadvantages that different groups within your organization may be facing. And then finally, to act on it. And that's the third ask that I have for you today, which is to, whether individually or as organizations, to commit to using your individual power to doing things differently, And where appropriate, to use your collective action to inform, support, and protect everyone that you're caring for, but in your organization that you have the privilege of working with as well. So see it, say it, see it, and act on it. A call to action for you all today. Michelle Obama is my final hero. And she has a quote that says, you know, you see our glorious diversity and our diversity of faiths and colors and creeds, it's not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are. And I think it's such a wonderful way to pull this together. It's so important that we work together to address this. It's so important that we find the honesty to have these difficult conversations. And it's so important that we work together to create a better future for us all. Paul, thank you so much. I hope that was clear and the technology didn't fail me, but I look forward to the discussion today.